things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
What up, Grim Gang?
Hi, welcome.
God.
Woo! Welcome to A Little Bit Grim. It's a podcast that you're listening to right in this exact moment.
You found us.
We're so happy you're here.
Welcome home if you like ooky spooky creepy stuff and things that are terrible.
Well, boy, did you luck out.
Oh, man. I can't believe your good luck, your good picking.
It's literally what we do.
What we do here at this podcast where we're going to tell you about a mashup today. And we've got what, like a true crime folklore today?
You know, that is what we had originally thought, that this was going to be true crime folklore. I have upgraded this from true crime to straight up disaster.
Oh!
There's too many dead bodies.
That's a good point.
For this to be just crime.
Okay, so we're going to say that war crimes are now disaster level crime.
Okay. Yes.
Ooh, that should be like a new whole, like...
Oh my God. We war keep crimes. An eye out for A Little Bit War Crimes, the spinoff podcast. Because the world just gives us nothing but really terrible material to work with.
Did you see that a governor almost got kidnapped in Michigan
today? Yeah!
Oh my God. You can't write this.
No.
You can't.
There were seven others who tried to incite a second civil war. Like, in Michigan, can y'all chill? Y'all have recreational marijuana and lakes.
Yeah, look.
Take several seats.
Take a breather.
Calm down. But what are you so mad about? A bunch of angry white men. Like, this world was made for you. What do you want?
Big pressed about it.
Oh my God.
And if this was a series of television, I probably would have turned it off around maybe June and said to my fellow TV viewers that this shit is just too far-fetched for me.
Writer's strike. Bring the original writers back.
Interns are getting fired.
The interns are getting fired. Here we are, back at the interns. Leave the interns out of it.
It's full circle.
God. Hey, listen, everything returns to tonic. That's my music major coming into play here that I don't fucking use.
You use your German. You do use that.
Ah, yeah. Ich spreche Deutsch. Ein bisschen. And there's like... No one else speaks German.
The only German that I learned in high school was Ich bin ein Berliner.
Well, listen, you got to be careful with that because you can say Ich bin ein Berliner or Ich bin ein Berliner. And one means I come from Berlin and one means I am a donut.
That's what I learned in high school was that I am a donut.
Yes, Ich bin ein Berliner. Yes.
That was exactly what I learned.
I am a donut. I always had an issue. And like, I studied German for a solid 9 years. And there is Geld and Gelb. And I, to this day, one means money and one means yellow. And I can't keep it straight.
Oh my gosh. I was in a linguistics course in college and we were talking about how the word name is very similar in all languages. And in my head, I was thinking in Spanish, you say me amo for my name is.
Yeah.
And I was adamant that Spanish was the exception to this rule. And some dude sitting next to me goes, it's nombre. Because me amo means I am called.
Oh, well, German has that too. It's Ich heiße.
Yeah.
Ich heiße is I am called or to be called.
I just felt so stupid. I was like, why am I here? Please let me leave.
I would like to audit this course.
Absolutely. And Damien Fleming was my professor.
Wow.
And he made a mark.
You remember that full name.
Oh, because I was terrified of him.
He sounds like a comic book character. Damian Fleming.
Yeah. He's a villain.
Okay. He sounds like a villain.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Trust no Damians.
No. Uh-uh. Mm-hmm. No.
Is that the name of the devil kid in The Omen? Damian?
Yeah.
I thought so. Mm-hmm. Here we are back at...
Spooky.
Taylor and Jenny making snap judgments about names with literally no solid ground.
No, uh-uh. It's one of our favorite games, though.
It's pure. We do like to make up full background stories for every name.
Oh, there was one trip home from Chicago.
Oh, God. And who are we talking about?
I don't remember what her name was. I think it might have been Barbara. But by the time we got home from Chicago, it was like 2.5 hours. Barbara had an entire backstory and a family, and her husband's mistress also had a family.
She was a divorcee.
Oh, yeah.
Soccer, mm-hmm. tennis lessons. Yes. Like, yeah. Poor Barbie. She went by Barbie after the divorce.
When That's
she,
like, true.
Got yep. a newfound sense of self.
Mm-hmm. Man, we need help.
Yeah. Send us names in the Facebook group, and we will create a whole character lore for you.
Absolutely.
It's our favorite game. Speaking of lore.
Yes.
Today, we're talking about one name in particular
that should spark fear.
Should spark fear, and you know it. And that name is Vladimir.
Not also Putin. Known as, no.
Vlad the Impaler. Or as I like to call him, Stabby Vlad.
I knew it was coming. You even told me about it, and it still brings me joy.
I call him Stabby Vlad in every instance.
Great. I am excited to hear all about Stabby Vlad.
I'm excited to tell you about him, because here we go. So I pulled, there's a gentleman named Mark Lalanila.
Oh, I quote him too.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
He wrote like 14 articles. Yeah. So all of the articles that I pulled from, I have one from Livewire, I have one from like ABM, I have one from NBC, all written by Mark.
Great.
So by most accounts, Vlad the Third, aka Stabby Vlad, was born in 1431 in what is now Transylvania, the central region of modern-day Romania. However, the link between Stabby Vlad and Transylvania is iffy at best.
In this research, we found that there was a lot of false information out there.
They're
assumed things
that are not true.
Right.
No. Just made up stuff. So Stoker's Dracula is linked to Transylvania, but the real Dracul, aka Stabby Vlad, aka Stick Boy, never owned anything in Transylvania. Bran Castle, the modern day tourist attraction in Transylvania that is often referred to as Dracula's Castle, was never the residence of the Wallachian prince. Full stop.
100%.
He never put foot in that castle. So, because the castle is in the mountains in this foggy area and it looks extra spoopy, it's what one would expect of Dracula's castle, but he never freaking lived there. So, we have Stabby Vlad, which is Vlad III, and then we have Daddy Vlad, Vlad II. He did own a residence in Sighisoara, Transylvania, but it is not even certain that Stabby Vlad was born there. Because the 1400s was, you know, riddled with disease, famine, and terrible bookkeeping.
Yeah.
It is possible.
Shoddy. Shoddy work.
Shoddy work at best.
No receptionists.
No. Nobody is here caring about the deets. So Vladdy the Stabby was born in Targoviste, which was at that time the royal seat of the Principality of Wallachia, which is basically like the capital, where Daddy Vlad was the Voivode, which is fancy Romanian for, like, the king of all everything.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, so he was the head honcho. But fear not, all of our listeners who really like to travel, one day we will be able to travel again. It is possible for tourists to visit one castle where Stabby Vlad certainly spent time, because at about age 12, he was imprisoned. And in 2014, archaeologists found the likely location of the dungeon at Tokat Castle, located in northern Turkey. It's extra spoopy with secret tunnels and dungeons and ghosts, and they're currently undergoing a renovation, and it is open to the public.
Ooh.
Ooh, indeed. Okay, so how did this total Vlad-ass get in prison?
Oh my God. I was not warned that this was gonna be a punny episode.
Oh, it's so punny.
I didn't do it.
Sorry, it's okay. It's okay. We can make them up on the fly.
I'm not good at that. It's very rare.
You did it so good, though.
I believe in you. Tuberculosis, TB, that's got a lot in there. It's very easy.
There is a lot of material to work with. All right,
I'm going to have to just sharpen up my skills here. Get
the dang old thinking cap on.
Right, I'm making a triangle above my head to, like, get this ready. Okay, go.
Okay, so how did this dude get imprisoned by an enemy country at the ripe old age of 12? Well, I'll freaking tell you.
Thank you.
So in 1431, King Sigismund of Hungary, he was neither holy nor Roman nor an emperor, but he would later become the Holy Roman Emperor. Sigismund inducted Daddy Vlad into a secret knightly order called the Order of the Dragon. So this designation earned Daddy Vlad a new surname, Dracul. The name came from an old Romanian word for dragon or drac, and his son, Stabby Vlad, would later be known as the son of Dracul, or in old Romanian, Dracula. In modern Romanian, the word drac refers to another feared creature, the devil. So, the Order of the Dragon was devoted to a singular task, to defeat the Turkish or the Ottoman Empire, which from here on out I will refer to as the Otters. I know this is historically inaccurate.
You otter not.
See, I knew you could do it.
Thanks.
You otter believe in yourself. Okay. I know it's an act. It brings me joy, and I just have to do it. So, conveniently located between Christian Europe and the Muslim lands of the Ottoman Empire, Daddy Vlad and Stabby Vlad's home principality of Wallachia was frequently the scene of bloody battles as Ottoman forces pushed westward into Europe and Christian forces repulsed the invaders. So, they're, like, playing the worst case of monkey in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Not good. Not a good idea.
Not good at all. So, Daddy Vlad was called to a diplomatic meeting in 1442 with Ottoman Sultan Murad II, but it was a trap. He didn't know, so, because of course, when you're called to a diplomatic meeting, you bring, like, your two very young children.
Not thinking that anything super sus is gonna happen.
No, but it was extra sus. So, we have Stabby Vlad and then his younger brother, Radu, which I call Beef Ragu. All three were arrested and held hostage. The elder Vlad was released under the condition that he leave his sons behind. And because he was a colossal piece of shit, he did.
Oh my God.
Right. He was just like, deuces. Best of luck to you.
I can make more sons.
Right. But I gotta get out of Hungary. So, the Sultan held Stabby Vlad and his brother Beef Ragu as hostages to ensure that their father behaved himself in the ongoing war between Turkey and Hungary. So he was basically like, I'm keeping your kids here and you better mind your P's and Q's or I will make their life very difficult.
Oh, that's not good.
Not good indeed. Under the Otters, Stabby Vlad and his younger brother were tutored in science, philosophy, and the arts. Vlad also became a skilled horseman and warrior, which all sounds like extraordinarily lovely as far as like prisoner conditions
for being kidnapped.
Right. But he may also have been tortured for part of that time during which he would have witnessed the impalement of the Otter's enemies. The rest of the family, however, fared even worse. His father was ousted as ruler of Wallachia by local warlords and was killed in the swamps near Baltini, Wallachia, in 1447. Vlad's older brother, Mircea, was tortured, blinded, and buried alive.
Ooh, yikes.
Yikes indeed. Whether these events turned Vladdy into the stabby, ruthless killer is a matter of historical speculation. But what is certain, however, is that once Vlad was freed from Ottoman captivity shortly after his family's death, his bloody reign began. So, Vlad's first attempt at the throne, he, like, made attempts for the throne, like, 7 to 8 times.
Oh, my. That's, I mean, dedication.
Was
he a Capricorn? Sounds ambitious.
It does sound ambitious. I could see also an Aries.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
For sure. Yeah. Or like Aries Capricorn rising, maybe? Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Something tumultuous.
Poor bookkeeping. I would like to know what his house is. And we never will. So, Vlad's first attempt at the throne relied on the military support of the Ottoman governors in the city along the Danube River in northern Bulgaria. Vlad also took advantage of the fact that Vladislav, who had come into power in like after his dad has passed, he was gone at the time. He was like vacationing. He was like golfing somewhere. So he, whatever, was gone. Vlad won his father's seat back, but his time as ruler of Wallachia was short-lived. He was disposed of after only 2 months because Vladislav returned from his vacation.
Oh.
And took back the throne of Wallachia. Vlad kind of took a sabbatical of sorts after he was dethroned for the first time. In between 1448 and 1456, there's really no record of what the hell he was doing.
That's like 8 years.
It's a long time. Yeah. And they're just like, we don't know.
He went and like lived in the woods and
became bloodthirsty.
Yeah.
Made a pact with the devil.
I don't like it. You can't drop off the face of the earth for 8 years. It's not, it's suspect.
It is sus. We straight up just don't know. The only thing that we do know about this 8 year sabbatical is that he switched sides in the Ottoman-Hungarian conflict. So captured by the otters, right? Held there for a while. In this 8 years, he was like, fuck them though.
Yeah. Maybe he realized that he was kidnapped and held against his will and maybe used as a pawn in his father's war.
Right. And maybe there's like a Stockholm syndrome thing kind of happening. He got a little more like cultured. We just don't know.
Yeah.
So he gave up his ties with the Otter governors of the Danube cities after obtaining military support from King Ladislaus V of Hungary, who happened to dislike Vlad's rival, Vladislav II of Wallachia. So, like, enemy of my enemy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So, in 1453, the city of Constantinople fell to the Otters, threatening all of Europe with an invasion. That was, like, a very huge historical turning point, because then the Muslim forces had the upper hand, and they were ready to, like, pounce on the rest of the Holy Roman Empire. Vlad was charged with leading a force to defend Wallachia from an invasion. His 1456 battle to protect his homeland was victorious. Legend holds that he personally beheaded his opponent, Vladislav, in a one-on-one combat.
That's like Roman gladiator style.
Ripped his old stinking noggin straight off his neck. Barehanded.
Wait, no.
That is what the legend says.
In my head, there was a sword.
No, no, no.
Like, just maybe put, like, a foot. Oh, it's like the scene in Twilight.
Oh, my God.
Breaking Dawn, when the whole theater lost its damn mind because we thought Carlisle got murdered.
Oh, my God.
Getting his head ripped off. That's what I have in my head.
Another really important vampire folklore.
Absolutely.
So yes, he ripped his head off of his body, and then everybody was like, whoa, bruh. That was a little intense.
I can't.
But what are you gonna do when you see a man rip a head off of a body? You're just gonna be like, all right, dude,
go elsewhere. What are we doing next?
What's your game plan?
What now?
So one of his first orders of business in his new role was to stop paying an annual tribute to the Ottoman Sultan, which was a measure that had formally ensured peace between Wallachia and the Ottomans. So basically, they were paying them like mafia tax.
Can you imagine being like a peasant under this dude? And he's just like, no, I'm not doing it anymore. And they're all like, but please, we're all gonna die though.
Will you please pay?
Pretty please.
I beg.
Cherry on top.
Help me, I beg.
Help me, I'm poor.
Help me, I'm poor. And we're going to get fucking murdered. Okay. So To consolidate his power as the new ruler, Stabby Vlad needed to make a big statement. According to legends...
That's not bad, big enough?
No. Oh, nay, nay.
Ugh, nay, nay. Oh, God. Okay.
This is what turns it from true crime to disaster.
All right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, according to legends that circulated after his death, Vlad invited hundreds of boyars, or the warlords of the area, like the head honchos.
Uh-huh.
To a banquet, knowing that they would challenge his authority. So, the peasants are like, we're like caught in the middle between like two forces that we have no control over. The warlords were the ones who were like either Wallachia or the otters who liked Vladislav and did not really like Vlad. So, Vlad was like, come on over, bud. We're having a dinner. Come hang. It's going to be chill. But then he had them stabbed, and their still twitching bodies impaled on spikes.
Oh, God. Okay. Do you have any fun facts about the spikes?
I do not. Okay. Do you have a fun fact about
this? I do.
Okay, go on.
Okay, so the spikes, well, we like to think that they were sharp.
Oh, I have... Wait, sorry.
Oh, you do have that?
I did not classify this as a fun fact.
Oh, okay.
But yes, I do have it in here.
Okay, great. I will let you continue.
It's then. Literally... Okay, let's really quickly talk about impaling.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. That, to me, was not a fun fact.
Let me define fun fact. It is a fact that the story would continue without. Like, we don't need it. It's like a bonus. It's a bonus fact. It's a bonus bullet point.
I wouldn't call this bullet point a bonus.
It's a fact.
It is a fact. It depends on what side of the stick you're on. Whether it's fun or not. Okay. Impaling is a particularly gruesome form of torture and death. A wood or metal pole is inserted through the body, either front to back or vertically, through the rectum or vagina. The exit wound could be near the victim's neck, shoulder, or mouth. In some cases, the pole is not pointy.
Nope.
It is rounded to avoid damaging internal organs and thereby prolong the suffering of the victim. The pole was then raised vertically to display the victim's torment, and it could take hours or days for the impaled person to die.
I'm really surprised there's not a horror movie about this. Or at least there is. It's not mainstream.
I can't imagine that would be... Like, stabbing somebody with a dull stick through the booty hole? I don't see that getting to the big screen.
Boo-boo. We got The Human Centipede.
Did that get released into theaters?
Oh, I don't know. I think so. I remember I watched it and I was horrified, but I watched it at home.
I only know one movie that is more fucked up than The Human Centipede.
The Hills Have Eyes.
No.
Oh.
Oh, that's not even like top 10.
What? Oh, I did not like it.
House of 1,000 Corpses.
I don't think I've seen it.
Rob Zombie, nobody, this is my line in the sand.
Yeah.
I will say it right now. I'm a pretty messed up gal. Okay. I just am. I like dark twisty. This movie hurt my soul.
Oh, it damaged
me. And I was like 19 when I saw it. Like, I was not a baby child.
I'm going to look it up. It's
the ending, because you have one tiny speckle glitter of
hope,
of good.
Oh, okay.
And then it's like, you wrong, though.
Oh, no.
It, whew.
All right.
I could see some impaling in that movie.
Okay. Well, I was thinking like the Saw movies, like the torture porn movies that are just horrible.
Yeah, for the sheer...
I like the first Saw movie. The first one is more of a mental trip with a sprinkling of gore. And then all of the rest of them are just...
gore for gore.
Yeah, just gore for gore. So
I feel like that about Pink Flamingos. Are you familiar with that movie? It's not horror by any means. But it starts a drag queen. It's actually the drag queen that... Ursula was based off of in The Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
But it is... It has, like, an unsimulated, like, oral sex scene, and it...
Oh, uncomfy.
It is obscene. Just for the sheer joy of being...
Just because they can.
Just because they can.
Mmm.
Yeah.
Not a huge fan.
No, not a huge fan. Okay.
Sorry. Derailed.
Sidebar.
Moving on.
Back to impaling.
Yeah.
Vlad is credited with impaling dozens of Saxon merchants in Kronstadt who were once allied with the warlords. So he killed their bosses and then he killed them for fun. In 1456, around the same time, a group of Ottoman envoys allegedly had an audience with Vlad, but for religious reasons, declined to remove their turbans. Commending them on their religious devotion, Vlad ensured that their turbans would forever remain on their heads by reportedly having the head coverings nailed into their skulls.
Dear God.
Unnecessarily petty. He was like,
This is when,
so religious.
This is what happens when serial killers go unchecked.
Right.
Nobody was a true crime fanatic in 1457.
No. And I wonder, like, how much of this was learned from him being held captive.
Oh, yeah. That's some deep-seated trauma.
This is trauma bonding, is what this is.
Boy, I need some therapy.
Woo, honey. During one of his many successful campaigns against the Ottomans, Vlad wrote to a military opponent in 1462, in quote,
"Oh, God.
I have killed peasants, men, and women, old and young, who lived at Oblucica in Novoselo, where the Danube flows into the sea. We killed 23,884 Turks.
Oh my God.
Not counting those whom we burned in homes or the Turks whose heads were cut by our soldiers. Thus, Your Highness, you must know that I have broken the peace." Bro!
Not chill.
Not chill.
I have broken the peace.
So I guess, like, you might as well, like, be aware. I kind of broke the peace a little bit.
Ask forgiveness, not permission.
I am so sorry. I killed 25,000 people, if not more. I, like, really wasn't counting. Your move.
Yikes. I keep saying that, but I'm going to keep saying it.
Yes. This got so heavy. I was like, oh, just like a little history lesson. Mm-mm. Wrong.
Mm-mm.
Vlad's victories over the invading Otters were celebrated throughout Wallachia, Transylvania, and the rest of Europe. But Vlad also earned a much darker reputation. On one occasion, he reportedly dined among a veritable forest of defeated warriors writhing on impaled poles. It is not known whether tales of Stabby Vlad dipping his bread in the blood of his victims are true, but stories about his unspeakable sadism swirled throughout Europe.
My stomach is rolling.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad we ate before this.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't make, like, a burgundy wine sauce, which is what, like, my...
Original plan was. Well, I saw you, like, down your red wine for a second, and I was like,
You should have...
I maybe should have followed suit.
I don't think I could have looked at it and read this at the same time.
It's all making sense to me now.
Yeah.
It's all coming back to me now.
Okay, in total, Stabby Vlad is estimated to have stabbed or otherwise killed about 80,000 people through various means.
That is, it's a pandemic.
That's more than a pandemic. Like, that is an insane amount of people.
That is so many people.
This includes some 20,000 people, additional 20,000 people, not the original 23,000 people that we were talking about, 20,000 more people who were impaled and put on display outside the city of Targoviste. Mehmet II, the one who conquered Constantinople,
yep,
invaded Wallachia in 1462. And this is where, listen, he was a bad dude, okay?
Straight up,
full stop. I'm not making any excuses for him.
Uh-huh.
But he evacuated all of his people. Mehmet was met unencumbered. The entire city of Targoviste was deserted. And in front of the capital castle, he found the 20,000 bodies of all of his otter prisoners that Vlad had taken, all impaled. It was a ghost town. Except for
talk of a house of a thousand corpses.
For fucking real. For real. The sight was so repulsive that the invading Sultan, after seeing the scale of Vlad's carnage and the thousands of decaying bodies being picked apart by crows, turned his entire envoy around and retreated to Constantinople.
Was this the Ottomans?
Yeah, he's the head otter.
He said, I gotta get otter here.
I gotta get outer here. Oh my god. Vlad's victories over the invading otters were celebrated throughout Wallachia, Transylvania, and the rest of Europe. Even Pope Pius II was impressed. Noted, although very harsh, he is a just ruler. To this day, he's a positive character in Romania because he killed the warlords who were like keeping down the peasants.
Okay.
And treated his people kindly and acted. I am not trying.
We're not glorifying murder here.
No, but I'm saying, yeah, he impaled 20,000 people, if not more. But those 20,000 people were coming for him, his family, his land, and his people, and he was not fucking having it.
He was like, no, sir, you will not.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. You are not going to come here. You're not going to kill my people because you have put me in the middle of a war that the Wallachians didn't ask to fucking be in. And so if you step foot in my lands, I'm going to put you on a stick and let the crows eat you.
Literally.
Goodbye.
Ugh. Wow, that is...
So, eventually, he died. Not long after the impalement of these 20,000 people, the Ottoman prisoners of war, in August 1462, he was forced into exile in Hungary, unable to defeat Mehmet II. He was imprisoned for a number of years during his exile, but somehow he married and had two children. I don't really know about, like... the Ottoman conjugal visits, but it happened. His younger brother, Beef Ragu, who had sided with the otters during this, like, whole...
debacle.
Kerfuffle. Is that a little understated? Basically, he died because local warlords killed him, and Stabby Vlad was killed sneaking through some swamps. And it is a... pretty it's for all of like the chaos and damage that he caused. He was just like ambushed while traveling in a swamp, and his head was sent back to the Sultan, and
one head for thousands
of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
can you imagine who, and I hate to bring it up, but bruh, the smell.
Oh.
That's something we don't think about.
Uh-uh.
The smell.
Oh, man.
Who's cleaning up 80,000 dead skeletons on spikes? Who's making that many spikes? Did they reuse the spikes? Did they not reuse the spikes?
There's a lot of questions here.
A lot of questions. No answers. And that is the actual disaster of Stabby Vlad. But fortunately... his tail has spiraled out of control. And Taylor, I would like to know more about it.
I can't wait to tell you about it.
Okay.
All right. So normally in these mashups, I do the true crime or disaster history lesson, and you then tell me all of the folklore-y things.
Mm-hmm.
And we swapped this out. And I'm going to tell you right now that this might be a little bit out of order. Bear with me.
I'll take it.
And some of this is going to be a repetition of what you said. Not a whole lot, but we're going to have a little bit of a repeat in some sections. Okay, so years and years and years after Vlad the Impaler was murdered, a young Irish boy named Bram Stoker was born on November 8th, 1847. So bookkeeping has gotten better.
Thank God.
So he's a little bit of a Scorpio.
Ooh.
Love Bram as a Scorpio.
Listen, we're about to have Mercury retrograde in Scorpio on the 13th of October. What day does this come out?
I don't.
A little after that. If you're listening to this right now.
Oh, God. We're about to spiral into chaos.
Oh, it's about to get, like, extra dark. And I know most people that are probably instills fear in your heart. I feel at home. I am so excited.
Girl, you don't need it to get more dark.
No, it's not going to get more dark for me. I am dark. All of y'all are coming down to my level.
Oh, my God.
Welcome home.
The thing that this makes me think of when you said Mercury into retrograde into Scorpio, I thought of a tornado making its way through a volcano.
Yeah.
Just lava getting spiraled around.
Firenado. Oh, they're so beautiful.
Yes, gorgeous. Okay. Bram was a very sick child and was bedridden until he was about 7 years old, and nobody really knows why.
Oh.
It was kind of a mystery, but he was paralyzed.
What?
Until he was seven.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then at seven, made a miraculous recovery.
Interesting.
Yeah. But during his childhood, his mother would tell him stories to keep him entertained. And this would have been at a very dire time in Irish history. The potato famine was in full swing, and his mother would tell him about what was going on in the outside world. But she would also sprinkle in some of her own childhood memories, which included a cholera outbreak in her childhood.
Ooh, cholera's no joke.
Right. So during the cholera outbreak, people just, like, fell over dead in the streets.
Heinous.
Absolutely insane. And then some were buried alive.
Ah!
Because they looked dead.
But we're not.
But we're not.
Sleeping sickness.
So Bram for sure held on to some of these stories in his subconscious and then held on to them to write down in pen and paper later. Bram made a miraculous recovery and went on into adulthood with very few side effects from his childhood.
Well, good for Bram.
Yeah. He ended up getting married and working in a theater, although his truest love was always writing.
Yeah.
According to Dracula, Sense and Nonsense, by Elizabeth Miller, in 1890, Stoker wrote a book about
Wallachia.
Yeah, Wallachia. Although it did not mention Stabby Vlad, Stoker was struck by the word Dracula. He wrote in his notes in Wallachia. In Wallachian language, it means devil. It was therefore likely that Stoker chose to name his character Dracula for the word's devilish associations.
Dracul.
In 1890, Bram visited a small coastal town called Whitby, which is said to be one of the inspirations for his novel. It would publish Dracula 7 years later in 1897, and the story is told almost completely by letters, telegrams, newspaper clippings, etc. The novel cost 6 shillings to buy.
Ooh, what is that, like 4 grains of sand and a rice cake? What's a shilling? Is that a real money?
Yes.
Oh, wow. So, I'm uneducated. I studied music. Leave me alone.
Kenya actually still uses shillings.
Really? Mm-hmm. Kenya?
Yeah. So okay. If you search...
Did Kenya used to be a territory of...
I don't know how, like, the territories worked out, but there are a few countries in Africa that used British money. But yes, I think so, because some people in Kenya have a British accent.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, their accent is very British, and, yeah, they still
use... Oh, this is real, not... You have been to Kenya.
Yes.
Okay.
But it is... they still use shillings. But I did the math. So, in 1890, 6 shillings would have been worth... a little less than 25 pounds in USD. That is about $32 today, which is
that's an expensive book. That's an expensive book.
Yeah, that's not like chump change.
No, no.
I'm not going to buy it if a hardcover is more than like $28.
Yeah, I just bought the Necronomicon for like $6 at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
That $32 for that book? That's like a pretty steep. Spice. That's steep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just get the Audible. Audible, sponsor us.
Please, God. Oh, God. That just gave me heart palpitations because I love Audible. Okay. Hashtag not an ad. So it was bound in yellow leather with red font.
Red leather, yellow leather.
What?
We're in theater?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I had the like weird PTSD flashbacks.
I know, I dug something deep out of my brain when you said yellow leather. It seems a little cheery for like such a dark ass story.
It does. I think it was a little misleading.
Okay.
So the novel was had spawned numerous theatrical, film, and television interpretations, despite the fact that upon its release, it actually was a flop.
For real?
Did not do well.
Oh, well, that's because it cost $32 freaking.
No kidding. This guy's publicist was not doing the job.
No, somebody's like $6. We gotta be honest here, bud.
Four. In fact, the Stokers were so poor that by the end of Bram's life, they had to auction off some of his notes, which were sold for about £2 each.
Yikes.
They were not well off by the time Bram Stoker died.
Wow, what a good investment. I bet those aged well.
It wasn't until much later that this novel even took off, but we'll get to that. So there are many copyright issues with the novel, and an unauthorized film was released in 1922 called Nosferatu.
Nosferatu coming down the stairs is my favorite gif of all time.
I do like that one. I do like that.
That's a good one. That was like the OG horror movie.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was very, very early in horror, and this would have been...
Silent. It's a silent horror film, isn't it?
Yes.
Or like the first scream.
Maybe first talkie.
Okay.
It was early in that life. There's one of the actors that was either in it or close to it that actually gave up acting because he couldn't do talkies.
Talkies? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, when you start talking in a movie, when
they
that starts.
Talkies? That's cute.
He's so cute.
Okay.
So Bram's widow, Florence, was like, hey, oh no. And she sued for rights to her husband's work because this film was unauthorized.
They good for her.
They took it and they just did whatever they wanted.
Is it like a straight knockoff?
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah, store brand, though.
Okay, got it.
The legal battle that is what started to draw attention to the novel. So everybody in Ireland was all abuzz about this legal battle. And everybody's like, what are they talking about? I should go out and buy it.
Hearts a flutter.
Uh-huh. After Nosferatu, Florence gave the rights to a theater production, and that production was a huge hit, and they toured the UK for 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. It was after the stage production that films started being released, and Bela Lugosi gave his iconic interpretation of Dracula in 1931. This is the point where we see Dracula as the dapper gentleman instead of a withered, elderly old man.
Ooh, this is where vampires got sexy.
Yes, exactly.
Which and is like such a common trope now.
Absolutely. And so much of this folklore is the building upon the previous folklore and the previous version of a vampire to get to what we have today.
Okay.
And I loved that. There was one short YouTube video I watched, and it was... basically like a short history. It's like 5 minutes long of vampires in film. And at the very end, the little cartoon vampire goes, and all vampires count, even sparkly ones.
Oh, boo.
And I was like, I love it. I love Twilight. I'll stand by it. I'm here. It was after the stage production. Okay, Bela Lugosi. Yep. Although Dracula is probably the most widely known vampire character, stories of vampires and their likeness were found in cultures dating back to prehistoric times.
What? Oh, Lilith!
Yes.
It's a vampiric subclass of demons.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I just pieced that together.
We're here to teach you things. That's what we're here for.
And mostly teach...
Welcome to your education.
You're going to get a PhD in ghosts after this.
I want a PhD in ghosts.
Isn't that the name of an episode?
No.
PhD in ghosts?
Ghosts. Maybe?
I think it is.
It might be. I name them. I should know. So the creatures vary quite a lot by region, some of which I'm sure we'll cover in later folklore episodes. But there was always one solid common factor, and that was that they would drink blood to sustain themselves.
Love that so much.
So fast forward to 18th century of Eastern Europe, where we find our most commonly accepted version of the vampire. Human, needs invited in, hates crosses, doesn't cook garlic, you know the deal.
Blah, blah, blah.
Anywho, the Eastern European region was pretty grim place to be. People dying left, right, and center, and sometimes no cause for the death could be found. When someone died of mysterious circumstances, the people found supernatural causes to blame. In all good folklore, it's an unexplained thing that people need to find an explanation for. Bada bing, bada boom, monsters.
See Salem Witch Trials.
Yes. They started digging up corpses.
Oh, God.
And found quote-unquote evidence.
evidence.
The bodies were rising again.
Oh, no. Because they were being buried alive?
No, because of regular dang old decomposition.
Oh, for
But they didn't know
sake.
What it was.
They're like, something bad's afoot.
Right. The corpses had longer hair and nails, which is just...
the way that your body processes dead cells.
Your skin is shrinking back. It's not a traditional growth. Bigger bellies, which is the gases that are building up in your stomach. Uh-huh. Not, like, ingesting food. And blood coming from the corners of their mouths, which is the gases that are in their stomach pushing blood.
Yeah.
So when they opened these coffins and saw all of these really horrible sights, they thought...
They're like, that's not how we left that body.
Something is amiss. The townspeople would do a number of things to prevent bodies from rising, including burning them and staking the bodies to the ground to keep them from getting back up. Which is where we get staking them.
Oh, got it.
At one point, the Empress of Austria, bad bitch, sent her physician around to try to find some dang answers. She was like, I am sick and tired of this nonsense.
This is bullshit.
Yeah, please go calm these people down. So the physician published his findings in a scientific work, and the Empress established a law prohibiting grave tampering.
Nice.
And he was the one that... ended up saying the skin is shrinking back, this is gases in the belly, and then that the blood is coming from the mouth due to the belly. Right. There are earlier literary works, earlier than Dracula, that mention vampires before Bram took a stab at it. I did get a pun. In the 1800s. The literary work that most scholars say was the first mention of vampires is... one called The Vampire.
Oh, classic.
Yes. Which is a short German poem written by Heinrich August Ossenfeld in 1748.
Nothing good came from a Heinrich.
Nah. Wikipedia tells me that there was a vampire craze in the 1720s.
Was there now?
Which I think is when the Empress of Austria was like, fucking stop. Acting like insane people.
This is so dumb.
Right. And I would pay so much money to go back and be a fly on the wall and watch people in 1720 go through a vampire craze. Can you imagine?
I want to see it now. I want to see, I would pay 6 shillings to see 2020 go through a vampire craze right now. It's 2020.
No, we might as well. We're already doing the thing.
We only got a couple months left. Let's like really crank up the gas on this.
You know the TikTok song that's like, let's go out with the bang.
Yeah.
That is what I keep thinking of for the end of 2020.
God.
Oh, God. Most of the stories involving vampires as early as the 18th century have a similar theme. A young woman is visited at night and there is an exchange of... ham fluid.
Ew. Gross. You ain't talking about blood and I know it.
The last time Jenny and I recorded, we spent 15 minutes in your living room talking about the things that make us gag.
Oh my God.
I laughed the whole way home.
I can't believe bodily, one specific bodily fluid, and I can't talk about it because it will make me gag. But it's so, I would rather blood. I would prefer blood.
Absolutely, me too. I don't want anything that's chunky.
Oh, God.
Is it chunky? Is it chunky? What?
I can't.
I was thinking of vomit.
Oh!
Okay, all right, let me refocus. most vampire stories have an overt sexual overtone.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Duh.
The poem by Ossenfeld is about a man who is rejected by a respectable and devout maiden and threatens to pay her a visit at night and drink her blood by giving her a seductive kiss of the vampire and thus prove to her that his way of life is better than her religious upbringing.
Literally, I'm balls deep into that. I love that message. He's like, come live on the dark side.
No, he's like, I'm going to sexually assault you unless you come with me.
Oh, she wasn't into it?
No!
Oh, I'd be into it.
She rejected him.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that part. I went straight to, he's like, come, wouldst thou like to live deliciously?
Absolutely. If the answer is yes, then here I am for it. But she said no. Let's respect the no.
All right, fine. Respect the no.
Other than uber-sexual and serious consent issues that we see in a lot of these vampire tales, we also have a few references to people rising from the dead to visit their beloved spouse. Sorry, that continued on the next page. The idea is that the dead person will also make their loved one dead so that they can be together forever.
Love that. So romantic.
It's something. A later German poem exploring that same subject with a prominent vampiric element was The Bride of Cornith in 1797 by Goethe. A story about a young woman who returns from the grave to seek her betrothed. Mm-hmm. And it says, from my grave I wander, I am forced still to seek the God's long-severed link, still to love the bridegroom I have lost and the lifeblood of his heart to drink.
It reminds me of that Hozier song.
Oh, yeah.
When my time comes around, bury me in the cold, dark earth. Mm-hmm. Can't no grave hold my body down. I'll crawl home to her. Same.
Love it.
Art imitates art.
There are many comparisons on Vlad versus Dracula, so I want to bring it back around to Vlad here. So my research, oh my gosh, my research took me down a whole rabbit hole where I found a YouTube video that is the history rap battle.
What?
Of Vlad versus Dracula. And I implore you, please go watch it.
Do you implore us?
Oh.
I stretched for that. It was too bad.
It's good. I liked it.
Okay.
I was dying. I kept finding it because I kept searching for Vlad and Dracula comparisons, and this was the only thing that kept coming up, and finally I was just so annoyed that I clicked on it because I was like, who knows, maybe it'll have some decent information in here. Oh my. It's a stretch, but it's very funny.
Okay.
But contrary to popular belief, Bram Stoker had very little knowledge of Stabby Vlad, and he mentioned that his Dracula was of Sicily? Yeah.
Or Sicily? Yes. Sicily?
No. Sicily. It's...
What the hell is that?
S-Z-E with a thingy over it. K-E-L-Y.
Cool.
Yeah. and I believe this is a part of Romania. I was unclear because I did Google where this was.
The internet's like, we don't fucking know.
I think it's a culture, not a place.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So that's why I had trouble like getting a locale.
Okay.
He got his inspiration from the destructive campaigns of Attila the Hun.
Oh!
Now, there are many disputes on the inspiration for Dracula's castle, as Jenny mentioned. Many believe that the medieval Bran castle played an important role, but many historians say that Vlad himself never set foot in the castle, or if he did, it was a very short stopover while traveling. Like, mm-hmm. He may have spent the night there, possibly.
It was an Airbnb at best.
Documented.
Right.
So I wonder if this could have been an issue of language. Bram and Bran are very similar. I wonder if people assume the castle and the author are tied together in some way.
Huh.
But that's just personal ramblings.
Yeah.
Others argue that it was potentially Poenari Castle who inspired Bram Stoker. Vlad lived in this castle for many years. Then there's Corvin Castle or Hunedoara Castle, where Vlad is said to have been imprisoned for years. And is this the same castle you were talking about?
Yeah.
So do you ever have those like sayings or the lines from movies or even songs that get stuck in your head and you don't know where they're from.
Yeah.
So for years, I'm talking years, I had a Hunedoara castle stuck in my head. Had no idea where it was from. Or no, even if I had made this up in my head until I stumbled upon Scariest Places on Earth.
Hunedoara Castle.
Yes! Zelda.
Her name was Zelda?
Yeah!
Oh, fucking course it was.
Yeah! I have full-on deep-seated memories of my mom letting me watch Scariest Places on Earth.
Is this... Okay, I'm having mixed... I'm so sorry.
Joker.
This is an answer I need right now.
I am here. I'm here for it.
Scariest Places on Earth. Mm-hmm. I remember back in the day, ABC's like 13 Days of Halloween would play Scariest Places on Earth. And there was also a show where like they would take in some like family to one of these places and split them up.
Same thing. Yep.
Is it, okay. It's same. That. Okay.
Yep.
Where are they? Can we watch these episodes? Where are these episodes?
The YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm into it. Yes. I'll watch it on YouTube.
And Bram Castle or Hunedoara Castle is split between two episodes.
Okay.
So the first episode is mostly history of Vlad. And they always did a short history in the beginning. And then they take the family in and split them up and make them find each other.
Which is so fucked up. Those would scare the snot out of little 12-year-old me.
This is why I am the way that I am. My mom was like, want to watch Scariest Places on Earth? And 12-year-old Taylor was like, yeah! Weirdo.
And then you're crying on the street during trick-or-treating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I finally got to put this mystery to rest in where I heard this stupid saying that I would randomly think of. And in this episode, I was completely awestruck because there's like three hosts. There's a few of them. And one of the hosts, it actually meets them at the location. And he gives them kind of the rundown.
Because, is he bald-headed?
I think so.
Okay.
Because they don't know where they are. And I forgot this. They don't tell them where you are. And you have to figure it out yourself.
You just get on a plane?
Yes.
And you're like,
better. Yeah. They tell you a region that you're going to.
That's insane.
Yeah. And then they put you in this place with clues, basically, to figure it out.
Ooh, wait, I got chills.
No. Mm-mm. No, thank you.
The world's wildest is escape room.
Where you might actually die or get haunted.
Yes.
So the host looks at the dad who, this was not even his idea. It was like his daughter's. And he's like, are you the eldest?
Who?
I need to look in your eyes and look at the man who brought his family into such danger.
Ew!
And I was like, that's so mean!
This is not his idea!
You leave that dad alone!
He doesn't even know where he is!
I was like, damn, dude! Back off! It was horrible. Oh, man. Oh, same. Okay, back up. Hunedoara Castle could also be where we were, or Corvin Castle. But the truth is, most people agree that the main source for inspiration is a place called New Slane's Castle in Scotland.
Ooh.
Nevertheless, Vlad certainly was an inspiration for the modern day vampire lore. There are earlier literary works that mention vampires. Oh, wait. I copy and pasted and this got real out of order.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Sexual conduct. Yep.
Sexual conduct, check.
Okay, so that is pretty much all the lore I have for you.
Okay.
So these Gothic authors, and of course Bram Stoker, there are many, thanks to these, I'm going to start over. Okay, so that's all the lore I have for you. Thanks to these Gothic authors, and of course Mr. Bram Stoker, there have been many adaptations to vampires. Some of my favorite TV and film vampire lore is the following.
I hope you list my favorite vampire movie.
Maybe. Okay. We have Interview with a Vampire.
Ooh, an amazing book. The movie did not do it justice.
I didn't read the book. I watched the movie.
Anne Rice is a queen.
Yes. Queen of the Damned.
Ha! An also amazing movie. Did you know that I've seen two for two.
Ooh!
So, old girl, the queen of the dam,
yeah,
died during the filming.
Aaliyah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And her brother filmed on her behalf the last, like, 15 minutes of the movie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And Aaliyah was in a super sketchy relationship with R.R. Kelly.
Yes.
And she was 15 when they got married.
Oh, she was?
Yeah. And they lied on the marriage certificate that she was 18.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. And his security guard knew about it and lied for them. Ew. If you haven't watched Surviving R. Kelly, all of that information in there is wild.
Okay. Go on.
Okay. Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Uh-huh.
Of course. My Twilight love. Vampires are sparkly in the sunlight. I don't care about it. True Blood, which, of course.
Amazing.
Also has a lot of fairy lore in it as well. But in that lore, the vampire blood is a drug for humans, which is a slight twist on the traditional. In Buffy, vampires do burn in the sunlight, but they don't have any souls at all. And Being Human is probably my second favorite TV show after Buffy. But if you want to know how a ghost, a vampire, and a werewolf could all live under one roof, I highly recommend the show.
Is that the end of them?
Yeah, that's it.
You missed the best one.
Which one?
Van Helsing.
Is the one with Hugh Jackman?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That movie.
Listen,
I do love that movie.
Those vampire sisters were my, like, bisexual awakening.
Absolutely.
Oh,
my. I didn't know.
That movie is why I know what the term viscous means.
Oh,
Never stick your hand into a mysterious bowl of viscous fluid.
There's a couple good quotes from that movie.
I love that movie. Me and my mom, who also, she doesn't like spooky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But she went with me to the Dollar Movie Theater, and we saw Van Helsing in theater like 6 times.
Oh my God.
I know. We love Van Helsing.
I love that movie. It's good that you brought that up. I forgot how much I like that one.
It's got Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. It's got werewolves. It's got,
Yeah.
Jackman.
Hugh Jackman. The little guy that follows Van Helsing around, I think he's a friar maybe.
Yep.
He was hilarious, and he was the one we always quoted. And I remember—
comedic relief.
Yes. Abby and Allie and I would sit and watch that after school all the time.
Good stuff.
So that is our mashup episode for the day. Yeah. Do you have a bright and shiny?
Yes, I do. And that bright and shiny is that for my real life job,
uh-huh,
I have a very huge project.
Yeah.
That is taking a lot out of me. And it is after approximately like 15 total hours of work, one fourth of the way done.
That's great. Good
Thank
job.
You.
I'm
Thank
proud
you.
Of you.
Thank you.
Push through.
It's taken a lot.
It's a lot. It's a big project.
It's due by the end of October. So if I make it through to see November, if I make it to All Saints Day, it will be a one.
All right. Good.
What's your bright and shiny?
Okay. So it kind of a little bit comedic that ended up, it was originally not a bright and shiny, but now it's going to be fine. And I'm going to make it a bright and shiny because it is going to be fine. So in my new house, I have a big second bedroom that I am making my like lounge, and it's going to be very lovely and cute. And in my head, I was like, Gryffindor common room. We're going to have it be so like lush and warm and cozy. And that was kind of in my head that I wanted. And then I also painted it blue and put in gray flooring, and I made the Ravenclaw common room on an accident. But I'm just going to make it work, and we're going to have all of those like warm kind of plush textures and stuff in the Ravenclaw common room. And it just, yeah, it's going to be great. I'm excited about it. I can't wait to start my new Pinterest board.
I am upset. We never see the Ravenclaw common room in the Harry Potter movies, or Hufflepuff, do we?
We do not see Hufflepuff. Do we see Ravenclaw when we're looking for Rowena's lost Ionum? Or no?
No. Because aren't we looking in the Room of Requirement?
Room of Requirement, yeah. Yeah, we don't. So, yeah, there's a lot of really cool art on Pinterest, so.
Oh, the Ravenclaw common room?
Mm-hmm.
I'm into it. I want to look.
Yeah, so that's my little bright shiny.
I love it. Well, follow us on the social medias.
Yep.
Get in the Facebook group. tell us what your Hogwarts house is and your favorite vampire
lore
media.
Oh, yes. I love that. Okay, yeah. Tell me your Hogwarts house and tell me your favorite vampire story.
Gotta know. Have a great day.
Yeah, and if you have a spooky story you want to tell us, you can email us or send it to the DMs.
Yes. Slide in them. alittlebitgrim@gmail.com. Send us your ookie spooky.
Yeah.
We love to hear about it.
And we love you.
Thank you for listening.
Have a good day. Be kind to one another. And we will see you on the flip side.
Goodbye.